On this episode of the Autumn Windbags, we're joined by Hayden Winks, who talks about Henry Ruggs' expectations coming into year two. The OTAs are here. We celebrate and get all optimistic. We talk about the players and their power move versus the NFL, and how you can make money based on the firing of NFL head coaches. This episode is brought to you by our friends at Nirvana CBD at nirvanacbd.com. Use promo code AW20 for 20% off. Nirvana CBD, find your state of natural relaxation, and we love that you subscribe, rate, and comment on whatever platform you're listening on. All right, here we go.
I got a dream of winning a Super Bowl. I got a dream of being in a Pro Bowl. I'm really not into dreams anymore, okay? I'm into nightmares.
Raiders! Caught! Touchdown! Raiders!
You're listening to the Autumn Windbags, an audio attack from the Silver and Black. Here are your windbags, RJ Clifford and Juan Soto.
Yeah, it is another episode of the Autumn Windbags, episode 28, and it's our first episode during OTAs. And it's a beautiful time of year. You know, it's May. The birds are chirping. The flowers are blooming. The heavy bags getting hit. The sled's getting moved. Routes are being run. Passes are being thrown. It's beautiful. OTAs underway, full swing, Soto.
This is like everybody looks good season.
Yep.
You know, everyone's got a chance. Everyone looks good in their shorts and their helmets and their jerseys, new faces in new places. You got new numbers. Everyone's got new, you know, people who got new coaches, new schemes. Everyone's got a shot. All the rookies are amazing. Oh my God. So this is the optimism season. And once, even once preseason starts, like you look at some teams, you're like, oh, that's their fucking starting lineup. Oh, that's going to be rough. But at least now, we're all right. Everyone's all right.
It's the peak of optimism. There's just, you know, we've got 97 defensive tackles. Hopefully we'll get a good one out of there.
I think we have 8. You keep saying we have 102. I think we have 8 or 7 now.
Close. Give or take.
It's close.
Can't count it out that like direct. But the big sign here for me is, and this was a tweet from Las Vegas Review Journal's Vince Mastignori. He tweeted out, Raiders offensive lineman Richie Incognito said, after the team voted to adhere to player union's agenda to skip in-person OTAs, Raiders got together as a team and agreed to get into the building and get to work. So if you remember, because of COVID and everything that's going on, we talked about on the show, if you have an opportunity, no matter what line of work you're in, to not work and blame it on COVID, you're probably going to do it. Right.
Probably.
If you can get paid for not working and say, well, because of COVID, you're probably not going to do it. Right. And so that's what the players union did. And so now, I guess officially the Raiders got together and voted to adhere to the NFLPA's ruling. And then wink, wink, nod, nod. They, I guess, turned around and like met in the back alley of the meeting room, took another vote and said, screw it. We're all getting to work.
Yeah, look, it's just everyone, every player who wants to play is going to back the union, the players union. And they should. The players union does a lot of great things for the players. But the players union doesn't go out there and play for them. You know what I'm saying? They put them in a position to make money. They don't go out there and they don't put that the play on tape. So Incognito and the rest of the leaders of the team got together and said, look, we don't have to. We're not being forced to. And I think that's the main thing now is we're not being forced to practice. Mm-hmm. Basically what they were doing is they were voting for the opportunity or the option to not do in-person practice. They just chose to do it. So if other teams want to do it, fine. Let's all be united in this front, but we choose to do it. So we're going to do it.
The NFLPA is like any other union, where the strength and the power and the decision-making rests with those with tenure, right? The veteran players, the long-term players, same with the longshoremen or Teamsters or electrical union, name any union. And it's generally the ones that control and dictate what happens with the union are the ones that have the tenure, the veterans, the guys have been around a long time, right?
Yeah.
NFLPA is no different. And so the OTAs, who are the guys that don't need OTAs? The 10-year veterans. The guys who are guaranteed starters, the guys that have been there for a long time. And it's
guaranteed
like,
money.
Guaranteed money. The guys that were like the rest might actually be more valuable than getting out there on the field for an extra few weeks, right?
Yeah.
But
this Raiders team is not that. It is not that at all. All our almost all of our DBs, first or second year players, our young receiving core, the part of the receiving core that didn't make a big jump last season that needs to do it this season. Our linemen, which there's guys that have started for us multiple times, but as a mesh, as a unit, haven't played together, all five of these, you know, new guys all together all the time. Mm-hmm. These are all players that need to be on that field doing OTAs, getting that extra work in, trying to get a starting spot, just trying to get a roster spot, building continuity, meshing with each other, getting synchronized with each other. Yeah. So like, this is the perfect example of the NFL Players Association looking out for the veterans who, you know, let's get a free paycheck, don't have to work if I don't need it. But teams like the Raiders that are young and have a bunch of guys that may or not make the team, may or may not start, these are the guys that need the OTAs. And it's good that the Raiders recognize that and said, okay, I'm not taking this extra few weeks of vacation. I need to get to work because I may not start, I may not make the team, or I may not produce.
Well, yeah, you look at the leaders who really, like who you mentioned, who really don't need the OTAs. It's not going to kill them if they don't have OTAs. You look at like the incognitos, you look at the Darren Wallers, you look at the Derek Carrs, these guys are going to be just fine whether they practice in OTAs or whether they don't. But they recognize that the team is littered with younger players who either have need to make that jump or drastically underperformed, and also free agents who need to drastically improve their performance. They understand that the defense needs to come a long way. And the more time that they spend in person getting used to the new scheme, the better for them and better overall for the team. So I think it's a good idea.
Yeah, it was a great sight on the Raiders released a little hype video on their social media, just like 60 seconds. And Derek, like you mentioned, Derek Carr's out there, Darren Waller's out there, Rinchy Incognito's out there, the leaders of the team. John Gruden, I don't know what this was from, but he's running like a little like Zoom coaching clinic. I don't know if you saw it, but I saw it just a few weeks ago. I don't know exactly where it's from, but he was talking. He said multiple things. It was really interesting, 20 minutes, but he wrote specifically how if your best players aren't your hardest workers, you have a problem.
Big problem.
You have a huge problem because now the younger guys and guys coming up, they see, oh, the very best dudes are the ones that skip OTAs, show up when they want, and they're still the highest paid guys. They're still the Pro Bowl guys. They're still the best guys. They're the guys that the coaches trust. When you've got the guys, all the leaders, the veterans, the highest paid players, and they're there every single second that the undrafted rookie, undrafted rookie is there trying to get a spot, and Derek Carr is still there working just as hard, even though his spot's solidified and his paycheck's coming no matter what, that is a great sign. And so again, we'll talk when training camp starts, preseason starts, and the season starts, but this is like step one of expectations, setting the tone, leading by example, just kind of building whatever the culture of this team is going to be throughout the season. I don't want to over-exaggerate it because it's just OTAs, but this is truly step one of setting the tone for what the next few phases of the season turn into.
Yeah, you know, I was watching The Last Dance. Rewatching it, and listening to Michael Jordan's speech, like, hey, this is, I was a hard ass. I was a jerk. I was tough to play for, tough to play with. But I never asked anything from anyone that I didn't do myself.
Yeah.
And when you have that leader on the team, it has that trickle down effect. And if you don't have that type of commitment, you stand out. Because people, especially, you don't get to professional sports without being an alpha. You have the alpha of the alphas out there, and they're saying you have to get in line and do this and that. And if you don't, you look at it as a problem.
Yeah.
So it's a good thing to have.
So now that we've got basically the whole entire team there, getting the extra work in, doing their extra credit, doing their homework, doing a little field trip. Who are the players that you want to see make the biggest jumps in OTAs? Because every single season, every single preseason, we see like, oh, wow. Like, remember last season, it was Bryan Edwards, blew everybody away in training camp, blew everybody away in OTAs. He didn't exactly pan out in the season, but who do you want to see really make the biggest jump this early in the offseason?
you know, it, I think
tough question because the answer is a lot of them. There's a lot of guys.
Well, yeah, I think two groups. I think it's the young secondary and the young receivers. If we can see a jump with those guys, it's going to be a big difference on our team. You know, the Trayvon Mullins, John Abrams, Damon Arnett on the defensive end, and of course Ruggs and Edwards on the offensive end. Edwards was killing it, man, until he got a little dinged up. We don't really talk about that, but he got hurt during training camp, and it kind of slowed him down a little bit. And then when he started working himself back in, you know, Aguilar, you know, towards the beginning of the couple weeks of the year, Aguilar started to jump out towards the beginning, middle of the year, and then he just, you know, got to ride the hot hand. But those are the two groups. I can't, you know, if you wanted to single out a couple of specific people, Jonathan Abram, I think with the depth that we have now at safety, you know, Joseph drafting Gillespie, drafting Merrick, you know, Diablo is going to be more of a linebacker from all accounts. But if we can get him to get up to speed, it's going to make a big difference in the secondary. And just Damon Arnett, if he can just show some of the flashes that he showed at Ohio State. Trayvon Mullen was played really well to begin the year, and then he had no help out there. So everyone was just putting their, you know, just scheming against him. He tried to do a little bit too much towards the end of the year. Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are the main two guys.
I've got two answers. One of them's a cop out answer. My cop out answer is the number one guy I want to see really delivered OTAs is Gus Bradley, the defensive coordinator. You know, because it's like we can nitpick every single defensive player, right? Let's be honest, every single defensive player has a lot of making up to do, right? Even our best players, right? Even like Max Crosby, who played hurt last season, he's got to get healthy again. Like Casey Hayward, who should be a starter. It's like, all right, you're a Raider now. What can you do for us? You know, Nicholas Morrow, who might've been our most consistent defensive player last season. It's like, okay, here's your chance to like really solidify yourself as a starter, as the man on defense. Everyone needs to do that. But unless like our defense isn't drastically different enough from last season to be like, oh, well, we added personnel and took out bad guys, we're going to be a lot better. No, unless Gus Bradley can really get this unit working cohesively on a scheme level, it really doesn't matter if Damon Arnett gets 30% better or if Carl Joseph like really fills that role or Max Crosby can get to 10 sack. All those little individual performances clearly help, but unless cohesively as a unit, Gus Bradley can get them all playing together better, I think that's going to be the life or death of our defense next season. Can Gus Bradley's scheme bring out the best in the pieces we have in place?
Yeah, it's about putting each individual player in a position to succeed and then making that fit together into a defensive scheme. So, yeah, it's going to be tough, but, he's been known to do it before. And these guys, they have to not just be slotted. And, oh, this is what I do well. This is what I do. No, you got to get better. You got to get better at things you don't do well. You know, one of the famous lines that I heard from Max Kellerman, he was talking about boxers and doing the road work when they didn't want to. And, you know, doing what you hate to do, like you love it. And that's how you get better. That's how you get great at something, is not just focusing on what you can do well. And, you know, these guys, they have to branch out a little bit and in a different way than, you know, maybe Paul Gunther was trying to do, just making someone do something that is completely against what they're normally doing. But yeah, having the players branch out a little bit and stretch themselves a little bit.
Yeah. Like, I think it's a perfect combination of making them be comfortable, right? Playing within themselves while also daring to be better, right? Like Corey Littleton is the best example. He was just so overthinking and always like, you see him at the, you know, pre-snap of every play last season at linebacker. And he's just like looking around, pointing at somebody. Like every single time there was a deep pass or a touchdown, there's four DBs looking around each other, like pointing at each other or like shrugging their shoulders or like throwing their arms in the air. Like, oh, hey, you, what, huh? What's going on? Our life's a Rubik's cube. We don't know what we're doing back here. Like,
it's like that meme of all those Spider-Mans pointing at each other.
You're in coverage. You're in coverage. I'm in coverage. You're in coverage.
You're your guy. My guy.
You know who I think has the biggest shoes to fill, though, like player wise, like as an actual answer, Andre James. You're trying. Replacing the best player on the team last year, and Rodney Hudson, our center, and like he was the captain of that line. He called out blocking schemes and patterns. Like he did half the work for Derek Carr. He was the leader by example. He made everyone around him better. It's, you know, to replace that guy, it's not just that's one of the few guys where it's like, all right, just do your job. You know, just know what your assignment is and do your job. He's the one guy where it's like, no, you need to do other guys' jobs too. Like that.
Yeah, that's not good enough at that position.
That is how big the shoes that are left by Rodney Hudson you need to fill is not just you be great. You have to make other people around you good. So I think it's unfair to expect Andre James to be the same center that we had last season. Mm-hmm. But he's going to have to be close to it if this brand new line can be cohesive.
The team didn't fall apart last year when he played.
Yeah.
So it's one of those good things sign. Where you get what you expect. And if you expect Andre James to jump in there, which he did, and do the exact same things that that Rodney Hudson did, he did it. He went in there and did the same thing. So we don't know how big the game plan was offensively for that, you know, what the calls were and all that stuff. But, you know, I have trust in Tom Cable. He's going to be able to get him up to speed and get him to know to do the same things that Hudson did.
Is there one player that you've kind of given up on? You're like, I don't think this guy's going to deliver at OTAs. I'm just waiting for him to fail.
Jonathan Abram, dude.
I was going to say the same thing.
I haven't seen anything. It's not about his athletic ability. Mm-hmm. It's about his ability to perform within the confines of a scheme.
Yeah.
I think he's trying to play 1-on-11 football. And he tries to do everything with him. It's a will thing. Is he willing to play within the confines of the defensive scheme and do his job? Mm-hmm. And nothing that I've seen of him has shown me that he's able to embrace it when it matters. Yeah. It's all great, well and great to do it during OTAs or doing mini camp or doing preseason, even the preseason games. But when the lights are on and these games matter, is he going to be able to contain himself to be able to trust his teammates, to be able to do their jobs and him focus on his job?
Yeah, that's going to be the Mona Lisa of Gus Bradley. If he can make this work, if he can make Jonathan Abram work, that is the genius level, you know, Doc Brown, evil genius thing. Like if you can be like, all right, let's put Jonathan Abram in just exactly places where he can thrive and let him contribute and not hurt us in coverage or other things. That'd be a giant feather in the cap for Gus Bradley. It's like assistant coach of the year type of stuff. You can turn Jonathan Abram from the dumpster fire we had last season into something special this season. All right, coming up next, our guest, Hayden Winks, wrote a fantastic article about Henry Ruggs and how he was used last year versus what kind of steps he needs to take next. We're going to talk to him right now. Hayden Winks, here he is. All right, joining us now from the Underdog Fantasy platform, his name's Hayden Winks. You can follow him on Twitter at Hayden Winks. Made it nice and easy for us. Thanks for joining us, Hayden. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Fortunately, there's not too many other Hayden Winkses in this world. I got a pretty unique name, so the username was available for me.
I blew it because when I first started in Twitter, 08 or 09, whatever it was, RJ Clifford was available, but because I work in MMA, I went, oh, let me make sure it's like a work handle, RJ Clifford MMA. And then I've branched onto other things. RJ Clifford's now been taken. It's like, why'd I have to pigeonhole myself? I never learned.
Yeah, I would, have you ever tried offering them money? Usually the people just like are very, like, they just want what
no
they
one
had.
Answers.
Gosh, tough.
Yeah, he went on there, tweeted three times, and then I assume threw his computer out the window and never went on the internet again. And so now I'm stuck.
Now it's a waste. That's just like shoving it in your face now. It's unfortunate. Yeah.
I feel like he did it on purpose. There's like someone who like legitimately hates me on the radio and says like, I'm going to screw this guy over. Well, mission accomplished, RJ Clifford, from wherever you are. Hope you're happy. So I was happy to stumble on this. I think
if he's waiting for you to like make it big,
yeah.
If he's waiting for you to make it big, he's going to wait a long, long
it's
time.
It's going to be a long time, right? The joke's on him if he's hoping that like, he can get like some kind of bounty on me. So I stumbled in this article you wrote yesterday, Hayden Winks, tape detective on Henry Ruggs. Why the 12th overall pick only had 43 targets as a rookie? And this was one of the, obviously, John Gruden, Mike Mayock and company, they get a lot of flack for their draft, a lot of it from us as well. And picking Henry Ruggs as the very first wide receiver in a historically deep draft class has kind of come back to bite them a little bit. At the time, it seemed like, okay, there's the top three guys. They're kind of interchangeable, 1A, 1B, 1C. But Ruggs, probably not even top 10 rookie wide receivers, at least as far as yardage, catches, touchdowns, et cetera. What did you make of Henry Ruggs' rookie year and what you expect next season?
I'm a huge Henry Ruggs fan. I thought he was really good at Alabama. He was kind of good in the ways that, like, maybe he's going to be a number two receiver in the NFL, which is fine. I'm okay with drafting those types of players in the first round. Unfortunately, what happened last year as a rookie, Henry Ruggs was basically was in a role that was completely different than what he was so good at Alabama. At Alabama, he was a yards after the catch guy. He was not a deep threat. And I think a lot of people see his 40-yard dash time, 4.2s, like literally one of the fastest players in the league. And then they immediately assume that he just plays like this DeSean Jackson role where he's just catching deep bombs all the time. That was not the case. It was slants. It was shallow crossers. It was screens. And he was awesome at it. I mean, one of the most efficient players, receivers coming out of the draft. And then this year, John Gruden, basically, he lined him up in the slot. He kind of moved him around the formation. But most of his routes were deep routes. And there was very few scheme touches for Henry Ruggs. And what we saw is we saw Henry Ruggs wasn't quite as maybe detailed in his footwork. Maybe he wasn't strong enough at certain points. And he was kind of basically being wasted as this deep threat when I thought that the Raiders probably could have got him some touches near the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, I mean, you touched on this, and it's really not something I think a lot of people outside of people who watch like a lot of Raiders-specific film, like kind of like mainstream analysts, you know, you got 32 teams to worry about. But us guys who watch a lot of Raiders, like, I feel like he got a lot more injured in game one against the Panthers than a lot of people give him credit for. He was still had that north-south speed, but he never cut. He didn't make cuts anymore at all. Yeah. Like, the one time he made a cut was in that deep ball, that last play against the Jets. You're like, wow, he like stutter stepped and made a cut. He hasn't done that all season. So it sounds like an MCL injury to me. So part of me hopes that the Raiders knew how bad his injury was. And that's why they're like, okay, you're now a deep decoy as opposed to trying to risk you underneath, because I'm with you. Derek Carr throws a beautiful slant. Henry Ruggs runs a beautiful slant. Should have been a no-brainer. Fastest guy on the field. These bubble screens and jet sweeps should be a no-brainer. And yet that didn't happen.
It didn't. And I mean, they threw him two screen passes last year. Like at Alabama, it was at 14 in 2018 and then 9 screen passes two seasons ago. Mm. And I mean, you just got none of that type of production. So maybe it was his MCL injury. I think the other thing that people always forget, when rookies get injured, they're trying to learn the playbook while like going through practice. So like practice time really matters for the rookies, especially when this last offseason, the rookies didn't get the traditional OTAs, the rookie mini camps, like all the other rookies of the previous classes have gotten. So he was already trying to climb uphill. And then when he got those injuries, it's hard to get these timing right, or the timing routes ready to go for game situations when he's not even practicing. So I think that those couple weeks early in the season when he was behind, it was very easy for Gruden and Derek Carr to be like, all right, let's just like get rid of that entire part of the playbook. And we'll just like let Henry Ruggs try to focus on this part of the game, because it's very easy just to run a 9 route. Like there's not like that much timing that has to go down, but like on a bubble screen, like a half second matters a whole lot. So you really need to practice those. So this is why I'm kind of expecting Henry Ruggs to have a little bit of a bounce back season, where he's not going to be like this, like fringe top 10 player in his own class. I do think that they're going to give him some scheme touches this year, especially when we saw Nelson Aguilar leave. It's basically him and not too much else on this depth chart right now.
Yeah. I mean, the first game with the Panthers, he had like 7 touches in like the first half or something crazy like that. The first drive, they were handing the ball off. They had quick screens. Like they were doing all kinds of stuff with them. Is that what you see more this year?
Yeah, I would guess so. And like you said, the 7 touches, it wasn't just like, oh, another out route for Henry Ruggs. It was like, now I'm in the backfield. It's going to be a toss out. Like as he's a running back, there were some screens. I mean, they dialed up a play action pass deep downfield for him. And then that stuff completely went away. And then the other thing is John Gruden's playbook is like notoriously hard to pick up. And there's those clips of like Chris Sims getting abused by John Gruden because he couldn't remember the playbook. So this, I think this happens to a lot of rookies. I think specifically John Gruden's the type of guy to be like, all right, get this guy out of here. Like, we can only give him so much. And I think another year in the off season to get him schemed up. I also do think that the Raiders, they could have prioritized receiver if they really thought Henry Ruggs wasn't going to be able to take the second year leap. And they had a lot of cap space. They basically addressed the defense instead of receiver. So that's probably a sign that the front office, John Gruden, are expecting Henry Ruggs to not just be this deep threat, to be more of a player that they can get involved within the first down marker. And the Raiders need that type of guy, 'cause that's like where Derek Carr is just so good at.
Yeah. What do you think about Bryan Edwards? I'm really big on him. I think that he got a little banged up during training camp last year, kind of slowed him down, and then Aguilar took off and kind of put him in the, we RJ and I joke that the first maybe 4 or 5 games last year, he was a glorified offensive lineman. He just went out there and blocked the entire time.
More than Darren Waller did.
Yeah. and he showed his ability and his strong hands, that his touchdown catch where the defender was basically hanging on the ball and he just took it away from him. What do you think about him going forward?
If Bryan Edwards can't start this year, it's just probably not going to happen for him. I mean, the Raiders need an X receiver. Henry Ruggs is never going to be an X receiver. He's too small. They don't like putting him up against press coverage on the perimeter. That's why they keep him inside a lot, and they keep him in this flanker position so he doesn't have to face that much press coverage. I didn't think that Henry Ruggs was like getting bodied by press coverage. I think that's kind of something that people say, oh, he's not producing, he can't beat press coverage. Rarely was Henry Ruggs getting press coverage because, I mean, if you're a corner, like, the last thing you want is Henry Ruggs getting a step on you. So they're going to play off coverage. So Bryan Edwards, there is a role for him. It's at X receiver. It's like the Nelson Aguilar role from last year. It's going to be him versus John Brown. And John Brown's more of that, what we saw in Henry Ruggs last year, as a vertical guy that's going to be off the line of scrimmage as well. So if Bryan Edwards can't win the starting job this year, it's like definitely time to panic. But I ultimately think he's probably going to play X receiver. And there's kind of be these like little rotation between those three plus Hunter Renfrow.
Yeah, I watched a lot of his college tape, and it was just, I mean, he was a completely different player at South Carolina. Like, he would just go up and grab balls. He's just the throw it up anywhere and I'll grab it kind of guy.
Yeah, he adds more physicality than the rest of this group. I mean, Henry Ruggs, John Brown, Hunter Renfrow, I mean, that's a pretty light, weak receiver group. And I think that Bryan Edwards, like, definitely the physical specimen of the entire depth chart.
What's your philosophy on scheming up plays specifically for guys? Because that was part of the frustration we were having this podcast midseason last season, was before we really were able to tell like how banged up Ruggs was. It's like they gotta drop some plays for him. They gotta scheme around him. They gotta make up these ideas for him. I was like, why? You should play to what's the best possible target or whatever is available. It's like any scheme you brew up for Henry Ruggs, that's one less touch for Jacobs. That's one less touch for Waller. That's one. You know what I mean? That's like, There's not a lot of great receiver weapons on the Raiders, but now we've got Kenyon Drake now, Darren Waller's only getting better, Foster Moreau is going to take all of Jason Witten's useless snaps that he took last season. Like, there's no shortage of targets anymore, but I do understand the let's get Henry Ruggs comfortable, confident. Let's see if we can build some momentum with him. What's your philosophy on scheming specifically for these young guys?
I think Henry Ruggs deserves like a screen or a jet sweep like every single week. I don't want to overdo it, but I think the whole thing is I saw Henry Ruggs as somebody that's capable of winning by himself, just in a different type of role. And that's on the slants, like we talked about, quick outs, shallow crossers, running mesh, that type of stuff. That's where Henry Ruggs, basically any route where a corner has to chase Henry Ruggs across the field, those are the type of routes you want to get him to. So it's not even scheme touches. What I want Gruden to do is just let Henry Ruggs win within 15 yards of a line of scrimmage. That's where you can really get the yards after the catch going, because I think Derek Carr is a very accurate passer. He's very timid though. And like, if you look at historically how often he throws the ball downfield, he's not one to do that. He's usually ranks about like 30th out of 32 quarterbacks on how often he's throwing the ball 20 yards downfield. So if he's not doing that and you're spending your first round pick on those type of routes, you're just never going to get the production that you want. So it's not even necessarily schemed touches. I think that there's plenty of room for a couple of plays here and there throughout the game. It's just like using Henry Ruggs in a way where you know the quarterback feels comfortable actually throwing him the ball, because Henry Ruggs has the juice. And I'm not sure if Bryan Edwards or this late in his career John Brown or Hunter Renfrow, they don't have the juice like Henry Ruggs does. So you have to get him the ball, not necessarily scheme touches, but like let him win in ways we've seen him win, and that's how he was winning at Alabama.
Just in general, what do you think our offense looks like next season? Because it's basically, it's more or less the same. Like John Brown's pretty close to a Nelson Aguilar. I think that's pretty close there. You know, obviously Kenyon Drake adds a whole new dimension out of the backfield, which is interesting. We're going to be tight end heavy as always, because we got, you know, two, arguably three really good tight ends. Do you think we'll see that much different of an offense this upcoming season than the last couple of seasons? And the other reason is the last two backs, people forget the last back-to-back last seasons, our number one receiver was out in training camp, right? Antonio Brown completely fell apart. Terrell Williams didn't play a single snap. And it's like your number one receiver's out before the season starts. Like, that's going to change your game planning pretty drastically.
Definitely. I think it's going to be very similar. And it's just kind of like the personnel hasn't changed too much. Like you mentioned, like you swathed a couple of receivers, but they're all like win the same direct way. So I don't really think that the scheme's going to change too much. The one thing, if I was concerned, I think, well, first of all, I think that John Gruden is in general a very good play caller. I was frustrated by Henry Ruggs' production, but he was scheming Darren Waller open all the time. He got him out available in space against like linebackers and safeties all the time. And he's just too good for that. And Hunter Renfro, I think, is a very limited player himself, but he has been decently productive at times too. So I think that Gruden knows what he's doing, scheming up plays. I do think that the one concern I have this year is the offensive line downgrade this year. I mean, obviously last year there's a lot of injuries. So like there wasn't like the Raiders like 2 and 3 years ago when they had like an elite offensive line. Mm-hmm. I would be a little concerned if the offensive line doesn't play as good and how much that affects Derek Carr, because Derek Carr likes to play in the pocket. When there is pressure, he likes to get rid of the ball. That's why he checks down so much. That would be my biggest concern. But I think the Raiders will have a top 10 to 16 offense, maybe even a little higher than that, just because Derek Carr and John Gruden have been on the same page. They are really good within 10 yards of line scrimmage.
Yeah, I guess concerned. I think it's a little bit of a strong word for me on the line, but I would say it's definitely a question mark. Like, yeah, again, like you mentioned, like, cut $35 million worth of players off the line. Like that's legit, right? That's not money you find in your couch cushions. I mean, unless you're John Gruden, right? But like, but when you stop and think about it, like Colton Miller, starting left tackle, right? That's no change there. Richie Incognito, should he stay healthy, which almost 40. So that's a big maybe, but solid there at guard. Denzel Good on the other guard, which he's a starter there, played great last season and before. Yep. First overall, you know, our first round pick, right tackle, Oxley Otherwood, rookie. So who knows, but all signs point towards him being hopefully potentially pretty well. And when Andre James started, you know, 5 or 6 quarters for us, he played well. So it's like, yeah, can you replace like the quality of line that we had? Like Rodney Hudson, like doesn't grow awesome on trees, right? Yeah, like that is a legit drop. But with how much money they saved versus how much this line has proven to be pretty good on their own, at least down as a cohesive unit. I don't know. Maybe I'm just like overly optimistic Raider fan, but I think question mark is fair. But like the more I break it down on these players individually and how much they've played, it's like I wouldn't be shocked if they played pretty close to our unit, how they played last season. Because again, our unit last season played 3 plays together. They only played 3. They're healthy for 3 plays and they completely fell apart.
Yeah, I think the Alex Leatherwood selection surprised a lot of people, and that's why it was graded so poorly. Yep. Maybe they could have traded down, like still drafted Leatherwood. Actually, I'm pretty confident that was going to be the case. Mm-hmm. But Alex Leatherwood was actually legit, like a very experienced, very athletic player from a Power 5 conference. Like that screams first round to me. So I think that people maybe are unfairly viewing that selection as a reach, but that doesn't mean that Alex Leatherwood's a bad player. I think he was a good prospect, and I think that experience will probably help him out as a rookie compared to some of these other guys. Like sometimes you see like a guy from a non-Power 5 conference come in and like that first year or two is like really tough. But I feel like these Alabama guys, I mean, obviously Henry Ruggs didn't do this, but on the offensive line, that much experience, that much athleticism, he can only be so bad. So I'm expecting good things from Alex Leatherwood. I will say the Raiders' biggest problem, the Chiefs, the Broncos are going to be better because they're healthier, and the freaking Chargers. Like this is like one of the best divisions in the league. So, I mean, the bar to clear is super high. So that's like the big thing. There's nothing you guys can do about that, but Justin Herbert's good. The Broncos top to bottom are good. And obviously the Chiefs have been dominant. So.
Yeah. I was saying a couple weeks ago,
if the Broncos get Aaron Rodgers, I'm just gonna be thinking of baseball season. All football season long. I'm just like, God damn it.
Yeah.
I told telling RJ about Teddy Bridgewater. He's like, he doesn't turn the ball over. he's a serviceable quarterback. When he's had weapons, he wins games. That's all the Broncos were missing. They had a freaking wide receiver playing quarterback last year. Like, yeah. This guy is going to be a massive upgrade. He's not going to be a turnover machine like Drew Lock was. Justin Herbert's just going to be scary. He was doing stuff that he didn't do in college. And just another year in the system. It's not going to be easy. But I'm with you with the Leatherwood. I was concerned about the slot, not the player, but the place where they picked him. But normally, offensive linemen from big conferences, they transform pretty easily, pretty well to the NFL, because they're playing against, you know, NFL type defensive linemen every week. Yeah,
definitely. Yeah. As for the Broncos, I mean, Teddy Bridgewater's a distributor, but you have 2 second-year wide receivers. You have a third-year tight end. I mean, there's a lot of ways this Broncos offense could get a lot better. So the Raiders are going to put up a lot of points this year just because they're going to be possibly trailing. They're going to be in a lot of shootouts this year. I think Derek Carr is like a fringe top 10, 15 quarterback somewhere in there. And he's usually more efficient than that. So just like we started the conversation, if Ruggs could be that number one receiver, his productions like could easily double, triple this season just because of like the way that the Raiders need him to be. And I think there was enough last year. There's enough flashes that you can kind of expect it. And especially when you add the context of the injury, the off season, all that type of stuff. I think people are trying to like sell Henry Ruggs at this like first round bust. I think it's way, way, way too early for that.
So what about the fantasy repercussions for the Raiders? Because, you know, for the longest time, it's like, all right, in my fantasy football leagues, I got to get a Raider on there. And it was just like, kicker. All right, I got somebody. Great, Janikowski. I got a kicker. Yeah, Janikowski. Thank God he was around. Now, you know, Jacobs is top five guy. Darren Waller's a top three guy. But with Kenyon Drake coming, I wonder what that means for Jacobs' production. With, you know, Foster Moreau and maybe these receivers getting better, what does that do for Waller's production? Like, what do you make of the Raiders fantasy-wise leading into next season?
I think Darren Waller is for sure the headliner. And I think that there's a debate right now between George Kittle and Darren Waller as the number two tight end in fantasy behind Kelsey. And I think that Darren Waller should be ranked ahead of George Kittle. Maybe George Kittle is a better all-around talent, but Darren Waller is going to get so many targets this year. I don't think that his production is going to drop too much, just the way that they use him. He's basically like an ex-receiver. Like the Raiders use him in similar ways as the Chiefs do with Kelsey. And he's so, so damn athletic. And he's still the best red zone threat on the team. So I think that Darren Waller should be viewed as the number two tight end once again, just like how he was last year. He should be going very high up in drafts. And then as for Josh Jacobs, I think that the Kenyon Drake signing was, first of all, a massive surprise. And I think that deserves some ridicule just because like there's diminishing returns. Like you only invest so much into the running back position. And then Josh Jacobs keeps battling the shoulder injury, and just like the way he runs, you kind of always have to be concerned. Like, man, is he just meant to just be a 12 game player each season? Cause he just bangs between the tackles too hard. And that's kind of hard to hold up. It's not like he's winning in space like Alvin Kamara, who doesn't miss that much time because like he's rarely getting just like these violent hits against each other. So I'm a little bit concerned with Josh Jacobs, but I think that Henry Ruggs and Darren Waller are lights out picks for fantasy.
All right. Well, for your fantasy drafts, you have a place for everyone to go. Where's that?
Yeah, Underdog Fantasy, we launched last year. We have the biggest best ball tournament in the world right now. It's $3.5 million. First place wins $1 million. It's $25 to enter. If you've never played before, you can deposit anything right now. Use promo code HaydenWinks, and we'll give you an additional $25 that you can use for this. So, it's a very clean app. The website's awesome. So Underdog Fantasy, $1 million and $1 to first right now.
His name's Hayden Winks. Get to check him out on Underdog Fantasy. You can follow him on Twitter as well, at Hayden Winks. And we give him a pass because we didn't let you know at the beginning that there's a certain tight end from Kansas City where we forbid his name from being said on this podcast. You didn't know. So I think we'll give you a pass this one time. Maybe next time we'll have to punish you a little bit.
Yeah, maybe he doesn't have to catch like 13 passes against you guys this year. Maybe that's what Trevor Moehrig's supposed to be helping out with, so you don't have to deal with that Kansas City tight end.
Considering hopefully all the safeties we signed, drafted, and picked up to stop him, hopefully exactly. Somebody will figure it out. Hey, this was great. Thanks for coming on.
No problem.
All right, thank you, Hayden Winks. That was awesome. So one of the silver linings, I'm always trying to find, silver linings and sometimes the cloudy gray life that is as a Raider fan, is that when you have been in the playoffs in a while and you haven't had a, you know, a winning record since 2016, not a whole lot of egos on your squad. You know what I mean? Everyone's kind of like, all right, we have no reason to be cocky. We got to get our act together. We got to work together. We got, you know, whatever egos we have to bury it, because otherwise you stand out like a sore thumb. You don't want to be that guy, right? Like the cocky dude on a crappy team. But times are a changing a little bit in the NFL. You look at the NBA and it's like, you know, LeBron James,
the players run the whole league.
They run everything. LeBron can like pick his team, pick his teammates, pick his coach. You know, like you see that all the time in the NBA, right? It's a players league. They control everything. The NFL is still very much a coach ownership GM type league. Like they control everything. Our time's changing though here in 2021, because this offseason has been really, really unique for that dynamic. We just saw Julio Jones say this week he wants out of Atlanta. He's trying to find a new spot to land. Aaron Rodgers has been voiced how disgruntled he is. Deshaun Watson that's obviously a lot more complicated with his legal problems. Yeah. But he was in a standoff with ownership. Russell Wilson's complained. Jamal Adams complained. And we saw Le'Veon Bell 2 seasons ago sit out for an entire season when he was in Pittsburgh to try to get what he wants. So do you see, Soto, a shift in the power dynamic between the NFL players and ownership coaches?
Not yet. It's the beginnings of it. If more top flight elite players follow suit, I think it's the ownership in the NFL. They're still a little too united, a little too strong, right? There's not as many mavericks as you see, let's say in the NBA. There's more maverick owners. They're gonna try, of course, and I think that you know, Le'Veon Bell is kind of like a plus and a minus for it. Mm-hmm. Plus side, yeah, he was able to get out because he didn't want to be there anymore, and he was able to get paid. But how has he performed since? You know, he's not done very well. You know, I don't know, man.
I don't think it's changing at all.
It's difficult. Yeah,
I don't think it's changing at all, to be honest, because the ownership and GMs are refusing to blink. So you've got Julio Jones saying, "I want out." This one's unique in the sense that I think Atlanta's ready to move on too. You know, $15 million, like you're not going to win now. I don't think that's a face off. What Julio Jones did do was take away some of the bargaining power from Atlanta. Before, Atlanta can say, well, let's see if it's a better deal. We're not going to trade.
That's what they can do. What they can do is say, look, you can make this easy and good for you, or you can make it harder for you. Because either way, I'm going to get what I want. Whether you want to play hardball now or, you know, wait and see and then get what you can for me later. You know, that's what they can do, is make it just more difficult.
All Julio Jones did is take away some of the negotiating power away from Atlanta, because now Atlanta always had the option of, well, we'll just keep him if you don't give us a better deal. We know that's out. Now it's a take it or leave it. Now teams are only negotiating against each other and not negotiating against the Falcons. So that one's kind of unique. But Aaron Rodgers, I feel like Green Bay has made it abundantly clear. We like you. We want you. Come play with us. But you don't make the decisions. We make the decisions. Team presidents, GMs, coaches, like, we decide what happens. You're not going to be able to just like say, oh, I want out, pick your team, and we're just going to shrug that off and let you do it. Deshaun Watson was in the same situation before all these legal problems happened with him. The team's like, nope, we're not trading you. You're staying here. We're not going to indulge any trade conversations, nothing. Russell Wilson, even more so. If you ask Pete Carroll now, he's going to say, oh yeah, everything's great with Russell. Yeah, picked up a lineman for him. Oh, we traded for a Raiders guard, you know, like, oh yeah, he's fine. He's happy. Everything's good. He made a stink for like a month and then it was all well and good. Le'Veon Bell made his move. And I think in the long term, it cost him. In 2018, remember, he sat out with the Steelers. He got that, you know, that $15, $13 million deal with the Jets. But then he fizzled out because he was playing for the freaking New York Jets and now made like $700,000 with the Chiefs last season. Yeah. So I don't think his holdout paid out. So I think we're starting to see players poke the bear and make efforts to be kind of like the NBA and control their own destiny, and more power to them if they can pull it off. I just don't think GMs, coaches, and team presidents are willing to relinquish that power. It's a 53-man roster. Like, there's no one player that can drastically alter a franchise.
Yeah, you know,
in the NBA, like two players can win you a championship in the NBA. Mm-hmm. No two players in the NFL can just like, that's it. And you win a championship and you get, and you win the Super Bowl.
I always think back to what AJ Hawk said is you wanted to be out there even for practice, because you don't want the coaching staff to get used to you not being there. Just get used to seeing you not out there and scheming for people that aren't you out there. So, I mean, that's a chance you take.
If Aaron Rodgers, Deshaun Watson, and Russell Wilson can't get exactly what they want, basically nobody can, with the one exception. With the one exception, and he proved that he's the exception to the rule. Because I think this is, I think he's the crux of this whole situation. Tom Brady, right? I want out of New England. I want to pick my team. I want that team to get my tight end that I want. I want that team to give me a great line. I want that team to make sure that my defense is up to par. And Tom Brady got all of that out of the Bucs.
Yep.
So because Tom Brady was able to do it, really the only guy in the NFL that can really pull this off. And even then, everything had to line up accordingly, right? Because his contract was up. He had a no trade clause in that contract. Things weren't going great in New England anyway, right? Coming off of a rough season. Everything lined up for him, and he was the perfect player to do it. So it is possible in the NFL to pull a LeBron James and pull a bunch of strings and get what you want, but you have to be literally the biggest star in the sport. Yeah. And yeah, and like seven things all have to fall in line in the right order to get what you want.
Yeah, you have to be the LeBron James of your sport, basically.
With help.
To do it. With help. And that's why I'm kind of scared this year, because last year's Tampa is this year's Broncos. They pretty much have a team ready for a quarterback to come in.
Aaron Rodgers, yeah. Another thing, we got news that the NFL and NFLPA have agreed to a $208 million salary cap. That's the ceiling, no floor. That is 26 or so million dollars higher than this year, right? So like you look at, for instance, the Raiders roster, half the team, maybe more, is on one-year contracts. Like the all the big free agent signings, other than Yannick Ngakoue, but like, you know, guys coming back, all those random defensive tackles we picked up, Willie Snead on offense, right? Like other than Kenyon Drake and Yannick Ngakoue, basically all these new guys are all one-year contracts. So this is I think all the players and like agents knew this. They're like, let's not like try to like get our big contracts this season. Let's wait until the salary cap goes up next season. I think the Raiders played it perfectly. Like they were in a really, no team was in a good position with the salary cap dropping, but I think the Raiders with a very manageable franchise quarterback contract, shedding $35 million off their line, which whether the salary cap went up or down, I still think was it hurt, but I think it was the smart move.
Smart move. Yeah.
And really no giant superstars demanding big money. I mean, Darren Waller has an unbelievably team-friendly contract. Derek Carr, like we mentioned. Josh Jacobs still hasn't picked up his option yet. Randomly, they chose to give Colton Miller his extension now, which maybe they think he's going to be even better the next couple seasons. The Raiders were in a pretty good place with the salary cap dropping like it did, and in a great position to, if any of these guys on one-year contracts become superstars this season, we should be able to afford the bulk of them.
Well, yeah, you know, and also we have to realize is you get to negotiate with your guys first before they hit the open market. So now that once a salary cap is set for the years moving forward, they can do for the Wallers and maybe some other guys like they did with Colton Miller. We'll keep this year the same, but the next 2 years, that's what we're going to get to see the raise. And they can do that with Waller. They can do that with anybody really on their team now, is once they have that calculus, this is how much we have to spend. You know, let's see who pans out. Let's see who does well during the year. Let's see who plays well. Then we can start doing these extensions and we can negotiate with our own free agents first. So it's a smart move. Smart move.
Not very often we get to say that with the Raiders, with the front office. Making.
So it feels good when you can, right?
Yeah. Honestly, the Raiders in general, as far as just pure money, not signing free agents, but handling their own guys, they're actually pretty good. When you stop and think about it, like think of the big money we've paid. Like I think they overpaid Gabe Jackson, you know, not terribly. Rodney Hudson was well paid, but worth it. again, that Waller contract is tits.
Amazing.
Just amazing. That Derek Carr contract at the time seemed like a lot because he was technically the highest paid quarterback in the NFL, but that was for like 45 minutes.
Yeah.
And now looking forward with how much quarterback play has like has cost people, pretty good little deal. Like again, we can look at all the free agent signs they've handled terrible, but the players that we drafted or kept and like signed like, you know, an extension or two, the Raiders have actually been pretty good, I feel like.
Yeah, yeah, they're doing a good job. They're doing a good job for right now. They're managing their cap wisely. They're giving themselves that room to be able to get guys that they need. So they have a lot of one-year players right now. I mean, they might just sit and wait and see what happens with the open market. I like what they've been doing this year. They got the studs and duds, like I said. They got those main guys that they want. Okay, cool. We got these guys, and let's get a lot of these prove it guys and see what they can do. So nice work.
You know how like some chicks, they're kind of hot at a certain angle under the right lighting. That's how that's how the Raiders are with their roster management. If you look at it from the standpoint of which guys do you have and who do you manage their contracts well, they're pretty good, right? You just ignore the who they sign as free agents and overpay. You just ignore who they draft. But when you look at it just from that perspective, you know what I mean? Like if she's wearing the right mini skirt and the lighting is just right, like some fluorescent lighting, you've got like 2.5 beers in you, you're like, hey, we're doing some right things here.
The Raiders roster is like kind of a hot chick, but not really.
Yeah, it's like in the club, bad lighting, blood alcohol level of like 1.8, and you're like, oh yeah, this is great. We're doing it perfectly, which is the biggest compliment I can give the Raiders.
I keep thinking back to the Shallow Hal. These chicks are hot.
You put this on the rundown. I loved it. These are Bet Online's betting odds on. You can bet anything in the NFL, which is great.
Yeah, just crazy.
These are the betting lines of the first NFL head coach to be fired this upcoming season.
All right, so here we go. The first, the best odds to be the first coach fired is Mike McCarthy from Dallas.
Obviously, right? I think that's kind of a no-brainer, right?
Yeah.
Although they're so stacked on offense, I wonder if Jerry Jones would like.
They are that bad on defense, though. They are that bad on defense, and they got maybe a couple, one or two guys. I mean, who knows?
And Mike McCarthy just one of those guys where you feel good firing him. You know what I mean? Like certain dudes, you're just like, oh, I feel good for you. I don't want to see you go. Mike McCarthy, you're like, yeah, fuck that guy. I like watching him get fired. Yeah.
So the number two is actually pretty interesting. The number two on this list, Vic Fangio from the Broncos.
Which is weird because I feel like he's done everything he could without his front office being able to get him a quarterback.
Yeah. Because, I mean, the rest of the team is fired.
Which I think is kind of part of it. Because like, remember how John Elway was the GM? And then he gave himself a promotion and made himself team president. And so now he can like fire people below him as scapegoats. I think that might be it.
Because even though
it's John Elway's fault, they don't have a quarterback. And so if they don't deliver this season and don't get a quarterback and they fall apart and they're the bottom of the AFC West again, Elway can just say, yeah, it's Fangio's fault. He's the reason why we didn't get a quarterback.
Fangio.
I like that one.
Jerk. Okay. Number three, actually also not a surprise either. Matt Nagy. Or Matt Nagy from the Bears, 17-2 odds to be the first coach fired in the NFL in 2021.
After going to the playoffs with an 8-8 record the season before.
We'll see what happens at quarterback there. Well, the news here is the number four most likely or best odds head coach to be fired, the first head coach to be fired in 2021, is your own John Gruden from the Raiders at 10-1.
Which is
weird. See,
I think this has to, because it's like, whenever you gamble, here's a little trick for all the Raider fans gambling. And I know it hurts. I know it's a pain to do it, but if you can compartmentalize your gambling with your Raider fandom, you can make decent money. So because the Raiders have such a rabid, huge fan base and such a passionate fan base, odds makers don't make odds based on what they think is going to happen. They make odds based on how they think the betting public will do it.
Yeah.
Right. So it's like, I don't think that Bet Online thinks that John Gruden has a 1 out of 10 chance, you know, the fourth most likely guy to get fired. But because the Raiders have such a strong fan base and they bet, so like if you're a Raider fan, like bet unders, bet under like win totals, because that number is always inflated because Raider fans, like, you know, bet their team so much. I feel like this is similar because there's no way Mark Davis fires John Gruden. Well, one 10-year contract, like he really can't. He'd have to buy him out of $60 million remaining on his contract. One,
yeah.
Two, we see it with every single team and every single coach. You fire everyone below you first, and then when you're the last man standing, that's when ownership comes down on you. If until Mike Mayock's fired and blamed for everything, and again, he shouldn't be to blame, but let's be honest. If the axe comes down, it's going to come down on Mike Mayock before it comes down on John Gruden. As long as Mayock is GM of the Raiders, John Gruden's not getting fired because Mayock's going to go first.
Well, I mean, when you're telling me that Raider fans should bet the under on win totals, that scares me because Superbook Sports put out the AFC West over under totals for your betting pleasure. And the Raiders were at 7.5 wins. That's not good. 7-10 record is not good.
And that's under Chiefs 12.5, Chargers 9.5, Denver 9. Denver 9? Denver 9. That's how tough the AFC West is, man. That's how bad
nightmare.
It is. That's it's nuts. It's pretty impressive. We swept the Broncos last season, 1-1 against the Chiefs, 1-1 against the Chargers.
Could have swept the Chiefs,
should have swept the Chargers. If the defense just had a pulse,
we would have won both those games. We swept the Chiefs.
We do got to give Paul Gunther has two redeeming qualities from last season. He has two things he gets to hang his hat on. One, we held the Browns to 6 points.
Mother Nature held the Browns, even
though there was 30-mile-an-hour winds, right? It's got to count, dude, right?
You have to line that up freaking down Lake Erie or whatever to get that shit through the goalpost.
And we held the Chiefs scoreless for two halves. Two separate halves. We held the Chiefs scoreless or touchdownless. That's his only claim to fame. Everything else, he fell apart. But hey,
those two things. What do you do?
You ready to do some What Up Windbags?
Let's do it.
All right. Raider Collie Cole. Great show, guys, as always. Here's the interesting thing. John needs to give full reins to Derek Carr, especially in the red zone. He throws a great fade and also has a great back shoulder throw. Waller, Edwards, outside Foster, inside. I'm with you, especially in the red zone, because you know when we had C.J. Baldwin on, and he was like breaking down the stats, how good Derek Carr was in the red zone under Jack Del Rio or other head coaches, and how kind of complacent and conservative he's gotten under John Gruden. I do believe, now obviously, quarterbacks don't live in bubbles, right? Offenses don't live in bubbles. Coaches don't live in bubbles. There's plenty of blame to go around for why we were so bad in the red zone last season, right? Blame for Gruden, blame for Carr, blame for the roster, plenty of things. But I do feel like the more red zone that we put on the shoulders of Carr, the better we'll be in the red zone. I really truly believe that. I think John Gruden just gets so conservative play calling wise when he's in there, and he has his designated plays, right? Spider 2, Y Banana and all that. And he is a brilliant play caller, but I think when he loses space, like you do in the red zone, like the flexibility and the creativity, I think takes a hit.
Well, the thing is, when you have a Darren Waller, how flexible and creative do you need to be? Line him up out wide, get everyone else on the other side, get him one-on-one, have a guy run underneath so you can't double-team him, like triple-team him, and give your best player the chance to make the play. I mean, look, we saw it his rookie season against the Chiefs when he had, like, what was it, like 7 fourth-and-goals when the Chiefs kept doing the pass interference and he kept doing the same thing over and over and over, and they finally got the touchdown, right? You saw it against the Saints, the 12-4 year with Crabtree with the 2-point conversion. Like, he can perform when you give him the chance to do it. I think a couple things have happened. Like you said, John Gruden is very risk averse, And he'd rather take the 3 points or punt the ball or whatever. He doesn't want to, like, he's very conservative with as far as that goes, right? But he's also, I think that's rubbed off on Derek Carr a little bit. So, you know, he Carr does have the chance.
Carr's a good soldier, right? Like, he's gonna do what he's told. And he's gonna shoulder the blame for being bad in the red zone, whatever, you know, if it's 60% his fault, 40 Gruden, or 40% his fault, whatever it may be, like, he's gonna be
he's
good
not
soldier.
Under the bus kind of guy. He's not gonna throw you under the bus. He's gonna take it for the team. But yeah, either way, it they need to get a little bit more stones in the red zone.
MF says, sadly, the Raiders had to rebalance their salary cap from offensive line to defense this year to help beat Mahomes. I hope the Raiders utilize talent and use a hybrid 3-4. I can't wait for this new look defense. Well, I don't think you're going to see a lot of hybrid 3-4. That's not really Gus Bradley. It's a 4-3 or 4-2-5 mostly. And I don't think sadly is sadly the wrong term. I think it was just correct where you had to take a $35 million that's sitting in old offensive line and move it to the terrible unit that is all three phases of our defense, right? I guess it is sad because you lost Rodney, but that's what you got to do. I don't know.
What I would do is I would take sadly out the and then capitalize had. The Raiders had to rebalance the salary cap from offensive line to defense. They had to. They were spending way too little on that side of the ball. They knew that they needed to get better. They need to have more playmakers. And that's what they went. They went out and got guys that can make a difference.
I don't know if I would use the phrase, I can't wait for this new look defense. I guess it's like, I can't wait in the sense that I can't wait to get my report card to see if I failed and have to go to summer school.
It's not going to be that bad.
That's kind of what I look at it. It's not that you don't think it's going to be that bad.
I don't think it's going to be that bad.
No. I mean, compared to last season, if we can't improve off of last season, look, then yeah, fire everybody. But to be excited about it, I can't wait for it.
I see the Raiders being in the upper teens, the 18-19 range in defense this year coming up.
That would be amazing. That would be the best defense Derek Carr has ever had.
I'm telling you right now. Look,
you think it's going to be the best defense in the last 8 years for the Raiders?
I think so. I think so. Right. Because look, these young guys have been put to the fire, right? And not only scheme-wise, but look who they're playing. They're playing look, I don't care. I'll put up Mahomes and Herbert, just those two alone. You take the top two quarterbacks in every division. If anyone who is sleeping on Justin Herbert going forward, you're blind. This kid's a fucking player, all right? It's a fucking nightmare. And just – the Raiders defense, as young as they've been, have been put to the fire for a few different reasons. Number one, the players that they have to play. They have to play Mahomes twice a year. Now they have to play Herbert twice a year. Okay. Yeah, and the other teams they have to play as well. But if you take a look at this year, they're playing the NFC East. You know, they're not playing the greatest quarterbacks in every single game. And you have someone who's going to make things easy for you. I think it's going to make all the difference in the world. When you haven't had think of like the Dennis Rodman going crazy and then going to the Bulls where there's more structure. He's still allowed to do crazy things here and there, but he's more focused now. He played the best he's ever played. And I think that's going to happen with the Raiders defense here. You get Gus Bradley, a comedy influence. I'm going to teach you. I'm going to show you how to do these things. This is where we need to put you to be successful. And I see us being a high teens ranked defense.
These are the quarterbacks that we have to play.
Let's see it.
Next season. Lamar Jackson. Out of the gate. I'm pulling up the schedule.
Ouch.
Lamar Jackson.
Okay. Ben Roethlisberger.
Tua. Yeah. Chargers, like you mentioned. Twice.
I mean, Roethlisberger, he's going to throw a lot of yards, but he'll throw a couple to you a game too.
People are dumping all over Pittsburgh. It's like people forget they were 9-0 last season to start. Like, yeah, they fell apart, right? And for all those reasons they fell apart, you think it could happen again? Sure, but like,
yeah, they fell apart late in the year.
I know. I wish we got them later,
you guys. Hey, man, I'm telling you, check out Ben Roethlisberger's face. as the season goes on, he's starting to get that bloat going.
Andy Dalton, maybe, with the Bears.
Okay.
Who knows?
I think it still might be early enough to move.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking. Hopefully they bring in their rookie early, because I don't think he'll be ready by then. Like, I think at week five of next season, I think Andy Dalton's better, right? At week five. I think long-term, obviously, Dalton's going to be gone, but I kind of hoping that's the case. Bridgewater, right?
Teddy B,
the Broncos. Who got drafted to the Eagles?
They have a young Mike Vick.
Yeah, but who else? Jalen Hurts. Giants.
Danny Dimes.
Yep. Patrick Mahomes. Joe Burrow. Dak Prescott. Mahomes. Johnny Football. And then Carson Wentz in the second to last game of the season.
Johnny Football.
Not Johnny Football, but
about to say we're playing the Rough Riders.
We're in the Canadian Football League.
Jesus.
But
the Alouettes.
We got some tough quarterbacks to face off against.
There's tough quarterbacks in this league, man. Up and down the league. There's just too many tough quarterbacks. So I don't know, man. I really do think that the athletes that we have, we just need to find someone to put the pieces in the right spot.
Last one, Scott Cross. Everyone seems to write off Willie Snead. Zay Jones should be packing. Snead is perfect for his role, and Snead has hands and is a crafty veteran. Surrounded by all the other weapons, he will often be the forgotten man. Lastly, the undrafted free agent running back from Wisconsin is an interesting weapon and does special teams. Wheatley and Charlie Gardner thrive together in this offense. Would be funny if this Wisconsin kid was in the Crockett role. He will disappear behind our huge line. All Crockett did was short yardage and handle a lot of touchdowns. That was a whole lot of weapons. How do you possibly game plan for play action against this offense? So interesting way to put it, because
a lot of stuff there.
And there's a lot of running backs. I mean, Jalen Richard is still on the roster. Theo Reddick is still on the roster. And you got Josh Jacobs, Kenyon Drake. And Alec Ingold is kind of, is our fullback and could potentially be our short yardage guy. So if they keep that Wisconsin guy, that's going to be interesting. That's a good question about the play action. Where was our play action last season?
Okay. So I actually responded to this guy. Our play action was not great because John Gruden, with all his positives, is very predictable in his play calling, and especially out of the formations. That's one thing I wanted to touch on with Hayden Winks, but I just totally spaced out. With the more athletic line and the more kind of diverse set of weapons that we have, we should be able to hopefully have some different formations, a lot more motion stuff to get people in different matchups and not be as predictable out of that. If you're predictable, play action doesn't work.
Yeah.
So if you know, okay, this is the situation and the formation where they're going to pass out of it, go ahead and fake the run all you want. Yeah, I know you're not going to do it. And that's the problem. Even though Gruden is good schematically, route rise, scheming guys open, he's predictable as far as what he, and that just goes to show you how smart and how talented he is as a play caller. Even when the defense knows you're going to pass, he still gets these guys open. But yeah, it's predictability. It kills play action.
Hopefully it opens up the slants, the play action, all those beautiful parts of the Raider offense that we kind of lost last season. And he was even a great offense. It was a really good offense last season. And still was missing all these pieces. So possibilities are endless for this offense. All right. That's it for us. Until next week.
Knock on wood if you're with me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Autumn Windbags. Really appreciate it. And, of course, a big thank you to Hayden Winks for joining us. Make sure you like, subscribe, and comment, and follow us on all the social medias. Do all those good things so we can keep bringing you all the great Autumn Windbags goodness. Until next time, later.